Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. We're back for another week of exciting news and analysis and complaining about things and coming up with wonderful solutions and all that good stuff that you listen to us for. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, and I'm joined today by Ms. Sarah Gaughan. Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks, Nick. Thanks.
And Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you surviving in this wild and wacky world?
As Pierce Brosnan said in one of his great performances as James Bond, just survive.
Very good.
And we all know that there were only two James Bonds, Roger Moore and Pierce Brosnan, and all the others.
You see, you bring up contentious
Oh,
topics
now
again.
we're going to get into a fight.
But let's not tear ourselves apart because we have bigger issues to deal with. Although I
Bigger
think you
than
are
who is the
dismissing.
best James Bond? No, sorry.
I don't know. I think you're downplaying. I mean, you might have a case, but Sean Connery, I think, is definitely. Anyway, let's not get sidetracked.
We'll have to kill you later, Shani.
Of course, the thing we have to talk about today, because we are having our, I don't know what to call it, our usual sort of media-driven race incident before the election. We have one every election. In fact, we usually have one in December, even if we don't have an election, around sort of holiday times when there's no other news. Someone uses a word that suddenly becomes off limits. Anyway, this most recent one took place on the Burning Platform, which is Gareth Cliff's show. So a shout out to all of our Cliff Central listeners who are listening to us today. It's kind of you guys are sort of in the news in a sense. And yeah, well, what happened was there was a debate being held by Gareth Cliff. He also had an activist from One SA or Movement SA or whatever, Musi Maimane's outfit, and DA leader John Steenhuisen. And it was quite a long discussion, asked about service delivery and problems and race and all these things that always come up in our politics. And there was a, I think it was about a minute worth of conversation that got clipped from this discussion, in which Gareth makes the point that most South Africans are not concerned by racism. They have much more pressing concerns, i.e., I think he said, what is it that they are thinking about how to put food on the table tonight? And that this is a sort of racism is a secondary concern to them. So the activist from 1SA, she said, look, as a young black woman, this is not my experience. My lived experience is that, racism is a problem that I encounter daily in my life, and it's not something you can get away from, and it's a major concern of South Africans. And Gareth Cliff said, well, there's actually some IRR polling which suggests otherwise. And when she sort of tried to bring up the fact that this was ran counter to her own life experience, he said, no one cares about your life experience. You are, he sort of insinuated that she may be just sort of bringing this up to play identity politics with. John Steenhuisen was troop still through all of this, probably seeing what was about to happen, although people have criticized him for smirking, and we can maybe get onto that in a bit. And of course, this was blown up as a big incident. People on social media were outraged, but then again, people on social media are always outraged. People demanding that Gareth Cliff face some sort of consequence because he had dismissed the life experiences of a black woman and minimized the impact of racism. Nando's, which sponsored the discussion through sponsoring Gareth Cliff's Burning Platform, said they were pulling their sponsorship because they felt that he had talked over her and not given her a proper right to freedom of speech. And so they were not going to pay the Burning Platform anymore. And so Gareth Cliff has lost them as a sponsor. I think that's a fair enough summary of what happened. My panelists can disagree with me. They think I got something wrong. But anyway, let's start with you, Sarah. What do you make of all of this? What do you make of Nando's? What do you make of what Gareth did? What do you make of the argument here? I mean, obviously, no surprises as to which sort of side of the argument perhaps we have more sympathy with, considering that our polling was cited by Gareth.
Now, look, I think that the main problem is from my, I just saw the 1 minute. I didn't see the whole program, is that basically Gareth sort of lost his cool and as a consequence, spoke injudiciously. Whatever he felt, I think the point he was trying to make, that I understood it, was that the poster that the DA, some of the DA, had put up in Natal, which had attracted allegations of racism and similar opprobrium, that whatever one thought of that, it was inconsequential compared to the destruction of virtually the South African society through the collapse of the municipalities, the theft, the corruption, the cadre deployment, whatever it is that has basically caused municipalities to literally rot. And that in the consequence of things, her lived experience was not pertinent. Now, I think you could probably say that his approach was aggressive and dismissive. But of course, you know, if you're aggressive and dismissive to a young black woman who claims that her lived experience is different to whatever you say, it's going to have the result it had. It's irrespective of the value of the argument or not. That's the context that I understood it. And one of the problems that worries me about the theories that include critical race theory, gender theory, et cetera, is that they're premised on lived experience, but how can you cannot begin to tackle an allegedly countrywide phenomenon that may affect 40, 50 million people on the basis of everybody's lived experience. You can't do it. You either have to live with it or accept that there are aspects that you can try and deal with. There are laws that have been put in place, and the reality is it gets dealt with as and when and how it comes up. So it was way more than it should have been, or it became way more than it should have been, and the response was perhaps predictable. I suspect, because I've had the sense from other interactions, that Nando's, from a sort of corporate point of view, has become more woke in the last few years. And its appetite for edgy, over-the-top, sometimes outrageous has passed. So this would have been an opportunity to pull a sponsorship, because if they were complaining that he spoke over her, well, he's spoken over some of his guests many times before, and it's not as if she was left with no space to say anything. So I suspect that is more an excuse, but Nando's a sponsor, they're commercial, they can support or not support what they like, and the sponsee, if there's such a word, takes the consequences.
Right, and our colleague Gabriel Krauser was, I think, on Tihle Ngobesi's show last night, and he made two points which I will shamelessly steal here. One is that, he didn't make the second point, but anyway. One is that it was a full interview. This clip makes Gareth out to be more aggressive towards her than he actually was. He gave her a lot of opportunity to respond to what he had said. He does have an abrasive style, so it's not terribly surprising that this exchange happened. But, he gave her a lot of opportunity to respond, and he asked her to come back on the show. He said, you know, I enjoyed having you here. Now, I don't know if he still feels that way after the way that this was sort of framed afterwards. But the other point which Gabriel made this morning to some of us was that Gareth actually today said that there shouldn't be a boycott of Nando's. He said, go out and buy their chicken. He didn't want this to become like that. And that's, I think that was big of him. There's often a temptation in the sort of cancel culture wars to try and counter cancel someone. It's not clear that always gets results. But anyway, Terence, you think that social media is a poxy and a plague, and you are a master of the considered thoughtful written arts. What do you make of this mess?
Look, I suppose my view on this is that I would not have gone down the route that Gareth Cliff did. And if I was hosting a show, I would not host it the way Gareth Cliff hosts it, which means I'd probably have about three viewers. And since, you know, two of them would be family, I probably wouldn't be much of a candidate for sponsorship from anyone. By the way, I'm old enough to remember Nando's controversial campaign about 20 years ago, where they had a guide dog stealing a chicken from a blind person. I also remember the one where they were canceling different race and ethnic groups from South Africa until they came to the sand hunter who said, "No, bugger off, I was here first."
Yes, I remember they banned that ad off of SABC, I remember actually.
But yeah, look, this is Nando set set the edgy stage. As far as the talking over goes, though, I remember Deborah Pater slamming Pato Jordan once. And I think she actually gave she gave him a wonderful way out because she was so intent on declaiming what complete bastards the government were that he didn't actually have to answer anything. And bitch, he could just throw it back to her as well. You fill in the blanks. So sometimes I think that there's that there's a bigger end goal. I agree that one's personal experience is not necessarily a guide to policy making. Some people are particularly unfortunate in their set of personal interactions. The way that you the way that you that 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 you take something on may say more about your own view of the world than that of your alleged detractors. However, I do think that it is not something to be to be dismissed out of hand. And I mean, I suppose if I was running that show, I would have said, well, this may well be true, but is this scalable or a matter to be generalized the entire population? I think let's take it out of the realm of anecdote. And I think he would have been in a much stronger position to push back. But then again, that simply is not his style. However, if we are if there are people who want to go down this route, then for it to have any moral validity, it must be applied evenly. A couple of years ago, what was his name? Dawkins, the doyen of the New Atheist movement, was had a had an appearance at a California station cancelled because of a tweet he had written some years ago about how he believes Islam is a great force for evil in the world. But this is a guy who, has referred to the Catholic Church as child raping and whatever. That was apparently great. That was speaking truth to power. It applies to everyone or it applies to no one. I think when we talk about where should the line should be drawn as narrowly and with as much regard for freedom as possible. And I think that we end up passing down a very perilous path when we are trying to when we are trying to measure what is acceptable, what is sayable by the offense it causes.
So.
But that being said, I do think that, a politics characterized by a little more politeness would serve us well.
Perhaps, but I must say that in this particular instance, I mean, I'm usually for the sort of more reserved approach to things, but I'm really with Gareth on this one. I think that this was an attempt to cynically deploy personal identity and race as an opportunity to kind of win the debate or to silence criticism. I've seen it used in this manner so many times before. It always is the stumbling block to whenever South Africa's just about to sort of get to the heart of what a problem is. We have someone come out and say, look, this isn't, you can't say this because it counteracts my feeling as insert correct identity here. And as another point I'm going to steal from Gabriel, he said, the survey that the IRR does, which Gareth used to sort of argue against what was being said here, is capturing the lived experience of millions of South Africans, or in this case, thousands of South Africans who are representative generally of millions of South Africans. And why should a well-educated, middle-class, intelligent, articulate person with a media voice be prior? Why should their lived experience be prioritized over that of thousands of ordinary people? And I think that's madness. Anyway, Sara, final thoughts.
What can I say? It's always fodder for the Twitterati and the left media to call out racism and to impute it to John Steenhuisen, even though he didn't say it. He looked like he was being racist, you know, which is essentially the view that was held. And frankly, the issues facing us for this election are so huge. The right of the ANC to be out of power as much as possible cannot be underestimated. The country is becoming a basket case, and we're talking about it's a comparative flummery.
Well said. Anyway, let us move on. I'm sure there will be more to follow on this later in the week. Let's start off. let's start off with a couple of interesting stories about where the country currently is in terms of politics. So there were two stories that we can kind of sort of vaguely connect together, which is that of people joining new parties. So one is famous Amatembu King Dalia Niebo, who has run afoul of many different organizations. He's fought with the ANC. He's fought with the legal system after he was, I think, either convicted or on trial for assault. I'm not sure. I can't remember. I think he was convicted
of murder.
Yeah, of murder. Yeah. I thought he was only convicted of assault.
No. He goes all the way.
Anyway, he then joined
drama.
He then joined the DA very publicly. And then he was thrown out of the party when he was convicted. And now he's joined the EFF rally this weekend. He addressed EFF supporters at Mandela Park in Mthatha, where he urged them to vote for the EFF, and he let them in on a little secret, which was, quote, "Let me tell you a little secret about a beautiful gesture I will be getting from the CIC," that being Judas Malema. "The CIC will buy me a Mercedes, a brand new car." Interesting. Sara, do you have any thoughts before we move on to the second part?
I'll tell you what I like about that on both parts, both his part and the commander in chief's, is that no one's pretending not to be slimy. It's full out in your face politicking. If I were him, I would join the EFF in exchange for a car. It's no one's going to be horrified by it, or but at least he's getting a car this time.
Yes, Terence, Dalia Niebo's had an interesting political journey.
Yeah, there's our former colleague Gareth van Onselen, who pointed out that there was an ever so pungent hint of hypocrisy around the DA's embrace of him at the time. Then he ended up in prison, and the DA wasn't so keen on him anymore. He has to go and find new friends. I lived in Taiwan at one point, and they used to have a problem with vote buying. Literally, you would go and you would get cash in order to go and vote for the candidate. This is during their transition. My brother told me an interesting thing. So he knew Taiwan very, very well. He said that when this started in the 1980s, a vote cost about 100 Taiwan dollars. Now it was up to 10,000. So basically, it was
inflation. You can't get away from it.
Taiwan's not like us. They don't have much inflation. But apparently, it was very simple. First of all, this democracy thing was actually starting to be seen as a good in itself. But secondly, people realize the value of their votes. If you really want my vote, you'll pay through the nose for it. Maybe we should be grateful that he is that it costs a car to get him, as opposed to Nando's meal or something.
Another interesting story about someone joining a new party is one that is just suddenly today being splashed all over the headlines, and that is a guy called Godfrey Nkosazana, who lives in a tiny village in Limpopo called Sepaku. And he's making headlines because he is a ward candidate for a political party. And you may think, well, that's not very interesting, except this political party is the Freedom Front Plus. So he said that he joined this party because he voted for the ANC twice. He thought that it didn't really change anything in his community. He looked at the manifestos and things of the different parties, and he thought that the Freedom Front Plus seemed to be the one that spoke the most to him. He said, so in March of this year, he carefully studied various political parties before deciding to fill out some forms and officially join the Freedom Front Plus. He's now the party's candidate for Ward 23 in Elias Motsoaledi local municipality. And the story just talks about him sort of campaigning in the village, doing the normal stuff that's done in campaigning out there, driving through the streets in a bucky with a loud hailer, saying, we want to fix things. We want to lead as the youth. We want to focus on things that concern us, like opportunities and the fight against substance abuse, things like agriculture, access to the internet, where people will access knowledge. These are the things we want out of this election, he tells me before displaying a great grin. So, interesting guy. I think he's going to have a bit of an uphill struggle there. But it's interesting because, you know, this is a sign, I think, of actually the point we kind of were trying to make in the first one, which is that a lot of South Africans really are focused on the things that affect their lives. In this case, substance abuse, making farming work for people in the area. Terrence, what do you make of this story?
Well, look, it's a kind of oddity, given that the Freedom Front Plus has made no great secret of what its priorities are. But it's not an entirely negative development. You know, you got somebody who's going with an idea. In a way, I suppose one could turn these things around. There was that young lady at UCT who was standing for the EFF. Yeah. I mean, you know, although I would strenuously disagree with the choice of a political home. She is making a choice and presumably stepping outside of prescribed and ascribed boundaries. And if Mr. Skosana believes that the Freedom Front Plus, or I don't know, perhaps they should, you know, with a tendency towards pluralism, they'll be the Freedom Fronts Plus or something like that. Well, you know, I wish him great success, and I think, you know, it'd be wonderful. It's really quite positive that somebody can take that sort of position. If he can do it without being harassed, you know, I'm sure so many of his neighbors will think it's a bit of a joke, and that's fine. But you know, if they if they're okay with him making the arguments, then that's well and good. Just on the Freedom Front Plus specifically, remember they have seemed to be reaching out sort of gingerly towards their non-core constituencies. I remember, I think in the last election, there was a Jewish chap who stood for them somewhere in Johannesburg. They've got Leonard Max in the Cape now. They had a Peter Murray in his umpteenth political incarnation. But you know, Peter Murray is always a guy who stokes strong opinions. So maybe that's just what they're after.
So he was asked specifically by the journalist interviewing him that, you know, the Freedom Front Plus advocates like for the Volksstaat, an Afrikaner homeland in the Northern Cape. And he said this, I think it is known as a party of the Boers. There's nothing wrong with being known for what you are. But if you defend your authenticity and stand firm on what you represent, there's nothing wrong. So if you can do something like that, it means you will do the same for us. That's got an interesting perspective. And it's something I wonder if people have said actually about the DA that, you know, during the Musi years, there was this belief, which I think is a kind of a racist belief, that you need to be like the ANC in order to win black votes. Mm. And the implication of this line of argument that Mr. Nkosana is making is that it doesn't really matter necessarily what your policies are. People will vote for you if they think that you're strong. What do you make of that argument, Sarah?
I think that's right. I think that the other thing is probably... However the EFF Plus situates itself with initially white Afrikaans-speaking South Africans, I would imagine, particularly at rural level, that he would probably have seen that they would understand the rural issues. And more than any other party, they are probably the part. And the reality is that even that you often find with sort of white right wingers is that, you know, if they sort of confront alternatives that are sympathetic to them, they don't just they're not dismissive. They will often take them on board, and so you've got a situation which probably explains the increased participation of coloured speakers in, oh, sorry, of coloured Afrikaans speakers in various intended positions come the elections. And it's like anything. It gradually becomes less about race than about class or identities of other kinds. It's not only or always, contrary to what the ANC and the EFF might say, it's not always about race. It can often be a whole lot of other factors. And as I say, I think probably the fact that the EFF Plus has worked hard in areas that it's been seen to be active, and the fact that it may understand some of the dynamics in areas such as this chap represents better than the ANC or the EFF or the DA.
It remains to be seen what's going to come of this. Although I suspect he's probably not going to do terribly well. Limpopo has proven to be a very resilient ANC stronghold, and even the EFF is actually, even though they've got some support there, they still struggle to make a big splash there. Terence, anything?
Yeah.
No, let's move on to the. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead on the line.
Well, I'm just reminded, and I think there's some connection, but you know, our listeners, our viewers can work it out for themselves what exactly it is. A couple of years ago, the IFP decided that they were going to revamp all of their candidates list, because they said that there were way too many people who were getting on because they were, you know, prominent business people or whatever, but who weren't actually working with their communities. And there seemed to be quite a purge of a lot of their high profile white and Indian representatives. Those that remained often tended to be, you know, like there was a Mckayzen farmer who apparently spoke flawless Zulu, and it worked out. Empowerment schemes for local, you know, proper employment schemes for local women, and you know, really had a sort of insight into the mind of their core constituency, which was also very sort of ethnically focused. And I don't know, I think that, you know, that's in some respects, I think what you're seeing here is just coming from the other perspective that, yeah, you know, he'll take the Freedom Front Plus's ideas and resilience and expertise and presence, and he'll use them for his own.
Indeed. Anyway, we don't have a lot of time, so I'm very briefly going to quickly move on to the last story, which is that we covered, I think, last week that the city of Johannesburg had agreed on a new power sharing agreement to buy power from Kelvin. I believe I was slightly incorrect on that show. I said that they didn't buy from Kelvin already. I think the city did, but they agreed to buy more from Kelvin Power Plant. And then they issued a letter to Eskom saying, please remove us from load shedding. Well, Eskom wasn't too happy about that. They said, you haven't bought enough power to be able to get you off the load shedding grid. And today, City Power, probably hoping that this would come after the election, had to issue a joint statement with Eskom saying, the collective understanding by both entities is that to protect the national power grid, we will work to reduce load shedding, but we have to take part in load shedding. We will not be exempt from it. Ha! In 30 seconds, Sarah, any thoughts?
Came back to bite them.
Yes.
Fiddle with load shedding a week before the election, just for the sake of the election. It's not going to end well, and it hasn't ended well. If it were that easy, we'd have done it sooner.
Definitely. Terence, in 20 seconds.
Well, I was going to say, like, you almost think that there's an election coming. But, you know, I've got a little anecdote, because last night I was going to make nachos, and I saw, like, we were on the hit list for load shedding. And I'm pretty sure that this little stunt saved my nachos last night. Now, I wonder if that lemon and herb chicken that I'm going to be cooking, why am I cooking lemon and herb? You know, it's almost like I could burn my fingers on a platform here somewhere. You know, it's... I wonder if I'm going to be okay for that. Well, you know, stay tuned. The Daily Friend will report back.
Anyway, thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, who's watched the show or listened to the show, especially those on Cliff Central who are listening to us. We hope you enjoyed. And we will see you next tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Have an absolutely wonderful day, everyone. Cheers.